Dime Roberts Stage and Studio. Hey, we're listening to music by Pink Martini and their CD, Sympathique. And you can find out more about the music at pinkmartini.com. You know, usually I tell you that we're going to feature a particular arts group or event in the Portland area or beyond. But today is something special. We're going to do something unusual. I've got two other hosts here who've been working on Stage and Studio, and we're turning the mic and the focus on ourselves and what we think and what we project for the performing arts in Portland. You know, what is it about the performing arts in Portland that makes us want to cover it as radio journalists? Joining me today are two of Portland community's finest theater artists, Susanna Mars and James Dixon. And we're going to find out what they think about the arts here and what they want to see happen in the coming year, plus other stuff. So stay tuned. This is a special perspective on the arts here on Stage and Studio. Hey, I'm Dime Roberts. I'm starting off with hey because I'm so comfortable with my guests here because we've worked together so many times.
This feels comfortable.
It's very comfortable. And it's like we're in a living room, but we're actually live in the KBOO studio. James Dixon is here. Hey, James.
Hello.
Welcome back. And Susanna Mars.
Hey.
Welcome back. Both are stellar performing artists and arts journalists here in Portland. And Susanna also produces a podcast, a weekly podcast called Adventures in Artslandia. And welcome both
thank
to Stage
you.
And Studio.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, you know, you've both been guests before, and then I kind of recruited you both as you were guests on Stage and Studio. And so you've been hosting throughout the year, and most recently, along with Sarika Mehta of Intersections Radio, have filled in for me during my 2-month stint as an actor.
In a beautiful production of
Caught. And an amazing production of Caught.
Which we can talk about now because it was such a mystery and we couldn't talk about it, but yeah. But let's not. But thank you both for your support during that time, you know. It was quite the challenge.
That's how it is as an artist in Portland, is to kind of step up, support each other. You had a big job. You hadn't done an acting job in a while. It was
14 years.
It was amazing what you accomplished.
Oh, huge.
Thank you. Thank you. It felt huge in so many ways. But, you know, you're both very active as actors and singers, both in Portland. You know?
We just worked together this summer.
Yes. And we featured that. The Melody Lingers On. Mm-hmm. You both got to work together. Would you tell us about some of the other projects before we launch into, like, the Portland scene? What else are you working on? What else do you want to talk about? What's coming up for you guys?
I was so blessed and honored to be working nonstop this year. So I've been working nonstop since June. I'm actually taking a small, tiny break.
What? I hear you on that, man.
For a couple of months, I am a company member at Theater Vertigo, so I'm devoting a lot of energy into that, getting our stage reading series off the ground, and we just figured out what our next season is, which I can't announce that yet, but working on that. And just, you know, I have some podcasts I'm working on, so I'm just waiting to be hired, waiting for someone to put me in a magical role that's made for me. But
there you
now,
go.
Yeah. And in the meantime, just really connecting with other performers, mostly performers of color, and seeing how we can support each other, what they're working on, stage readings, tips, connections, things like that. That's pretty much what I'm doing for now. Yeah.
Much needed, too, that networking. And Susanna?
Well, it's interesting. I'm a resident artist at Artist Repertory Theater, and I'm on the Workbench program, still working on a piece that I started writing after my father died in 2011, and it's evolving. Luann Schooler at Artist Rep has been just a wonderful support in that way, so I'm still working on that. I'm doing...
And I just want to interject here that your father was the great Kenneth Mars,
who was
in Young Frankenstein and the producers. I mean, just stellar talent. And you're working on a personal piece about him?
Yes. What I'm finding is it's really more about me and the impact of growing up with a famous person and my growth as an artist and as a woman, an independent woman, which is interesting when you grow up with someone so big.
I want to see that show.
Oh, D-May, that's so kind of you. I'm trying to pull it out of myself right now.
It's the hardest thing, the personal writing, but it's going to be so valuable to you. Oh, my gosh, I can't wait to see that.
So as a resident, that's, you know, at the fore for me. Plus, I'm the music events specialist at Artist Rep. We're bringing United by Music to the first preview of The Humans this Sunday, which is really
exciting. What's United by Music?
It's a wonderful choir of intellectually challenged adults incredible organization. Take a look at United by Music online. It's great. Doing a piano bar this Saturday night at Artist Rep. So those are events that I'm coordinating. And, of course, all the supportive crew at Artist Rep are always working on those. Then I'm working on a new musical at Portland Playhouse, which we had about 5 days of workshop recently, called Scarlet, written by Michelle Horgan. And that'll run at Portland Playhouse in early 2018. And then, crazily enough, I got hired recently to do 8 performances of a holiday show at Coho called Holiday Shorts and Songs, a live-action mashup of holiday tunes, directed by Philip Cuomo, and you can take a look at that at Coho Productions' website.
Oh, that's so exciting. You got so much. I can't believe you just go from one thing to another.
Well, you know how it is, though. You don't really go from one thing to another. They're all on top of each other, and as an actor, you are really kind of... I mean, I wake up in the morning some mornings and I just think to myself, okay, what do I do first? Because I'm trying to make my living as an actor, and that I knew you wanted to talk about that a little bit. But the reality of trying to make a living as an actor is it's very challenging, and it requires a full-time attitude about what you're up to.
That's true. I tried it last year. I did it for a year. I just started a new full-time job with a company called Arts People, formerly known as Ticket Turtle. And it's hard. It's hard. I wake up in the morning and ask my phone what I'm doing today. What am I doing today? Yes, okay.
I try to unstress myself by kind of, when I do my yoga, I'm like, show me the day. Okay, because I'm a total type A control freak. And I just try to open my head to the idea that I'm not in charge of my day. It's awesome. I love what I do. Let it go.
That's kind of where I'm at. I just need a big, big break,
right?
After doing COD. Mm-hmm. And, it's just sometimes you live in fear that if you don't check your Google alerts that you're gonna miss something
I know.
Important.
I thought I was the only one who thought that.
No.
Oh, yeah. it's anxiety making, that's for sure.
It really can
be. So one of the topics we could cover in the future is how do you make a living as a working artist and having all these different hats that you have to wear, mm-hmm. To make a living, as well as being able to do your art. So that's one topic we could cover.
Right, and I think that has to include adding in the community at large, businesses at large who can use performing artists in their businesses to help them sustain a living wage.
There you go. So there's a topic right there. Mm-hmm. I think it's an important one. In case you just joined us, you're listening to Sage and Studio, and we're dedicating today's show to the Portland performing arts scene, how it's changed, how it's grown, what can we expect in 2018, what do we want to cover, what excites us? That's what also I would like to ask you, what you're excited about covering in performing arts. But before we start that, we had some pretty big news today. This mm-hmm. morning, Chris Coleman, the 17-year artistic director of Portland Center Stage, mm-hmm. it was just announced. Actually, the Denver Post announced it before there was a press release from Portland Center Stage that he is going to be leaving Portland Center Stage and going to Denver Theater. Is it the Denver mm-hmm. Theater Company?
Denver Theater Center, I believe.
Yeah, in Denver. Mm-hmm. And, that's a pretty big deal in this community after 17 years. Mm-hmm. And, it's interesting to me, that he would move, mm-hmm. Because it's so much so that Portland seems to be a destination place for so many artists here. Mm-hmm. And most people like to stay, mm-hmm. Once but I guess this was such a great opportunity. So what I would like to see happen, he's going to be leaving, I guess, after the end of the 2017-2018 season. And I would like to see, and maybe this is in their works, is for them to find an artistic director of color, mm-hmm. And maybe an artistic director female of color, woman of color, mm-hmm. because there's so few, in the nation. And I think that somebody accounted, just even like a handful across the country of artistic directors of color who were head of regional theaters. It wasn't mm-hmm. a huge list.
Right.
So mm-hmm. this is something that could be a big moment for Portland if that happened.
Could not agree more with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Something to think about for those that don't work in the arts, a lot of that is, as much as we want that, depends on what the board of directors decides, how that happens. And when you talk about diversity in the arts, it's not just the person at the helm, it's the people on the board, it's the people on the staff, it's the people in our audiences and our seats. It's a grand opportunity when you think about what's happening in the world, how do we respond to the needs of the community? What can we do? How can we be of service? I'm really excited to see what's happening there. But speaking of women of color, which we were going to talk about later, I'm really excited to talk about, and I don't want to change the subject, Side-Eyed Collaborations. It's a young theater company. It's a multicultural theater company that's debuting December 4th.
What's it called again?
Side-Eyed Collaborations.
Side-Eye. Okay.
And they will have two black women at the helm of this.
Who is it? Who are they?
I'm not able to say.
And that's a local group?
They are local.
Okay.
That's all we're saying for now. But they will be announcing their debut December 4th. So, I mean, there's room. We're making change here. But Chris Coleman, and we worked together for 5 years. I'm really excited for him.
Mm.
He was there for quite some time. And I think in any organization, change is good. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to think about.
And exciting for him. And,
yeah.
I mean, I was in his first show here in Portland and was... It's been a lot of fun to watch what he's done in the theater, what he's done in the community, his commitment to arts education. It's been so many wonderful pieces he's developed, and I wish him all the best. And I know that this is a super wonderful moment for us.
Well, and I had to think back. 17 years, has it really been that long? Because it didn't seem like that long to mm-hmm. me, you know, having been here as long as you and I have been. I think
right.
we've been here almost the same amount of time
mm-hmm.
As a working artist. And you know, it's interesting reading both of your bios, too, because I didn't know, you know, I know you as a gifted actress and singer, but I didn't realize you were a third grade teacher in South Central Los Angeles.
Yep. Right before I moved here.
Did you know this?
I mean,
yeah,
so
well.
What was that like?
Oh, it was awesome. It's so interesting. My sister is a teacher now. And when I moved here, I was a substitute. That kind of helped me fill in the financial gaps right when I first got married and everything. And as I was getting more work, I realized, to be a singer and be a teacher in the day, especially a sub, it's really hard on the voice and stress level, blah, blah. But I did it for quite a while. Teaching in South Central was an absolute joy and also probably one of the most difficult things I've ever done. Very large classrooms. I had a bilingual aide. I had a very large Hispanic population. And I love young people. That is really close to my heart. But what the educational system expects of teachers is so unrealistic. On even today with my sister, I've said to my husband, oh my gosh, if I just kept teaching, I'd have PERS now, you know, I would have retirement. And, you know, as an actor, I've got a very small retirement through Actors Equity Association. But I think the reality is I loved a diversity of my career and the ability to do a lot of different things. Teaching is so demanding and almost impossible to do what they want you to do. But my love for children is still there. And of course, I've had opportunity to work with young people through the Haven Project, all sorts of mentorships.
And we even did a 1 week during Tiger's Heart Shakespeare Company where we taught Shakespeare to teenagers.
Yes,
yeah,
and it was so much fun. So there are lots of ways I can still do that. I volunteer at the high school in our neighborhood every once a week.
And you raised a child.
My kids went there. Yeah.
Or two. I didn't realize there
were
two.
I raised one. The other one, she's like a wolf. No, just kidding.
Well, what's kept you in Portland? I mean, you know, all these years.
Well, my children and my husband, really.
So you made a life here. And James is someone who more recently moved to Portland. What drew you here and what's keeping you here?
I just landed into Portland. I was moving to London to marry my partner and they wouldn't let me in the country. And I called my best friend and he said, come to Portland. I was like, well, send me to Portland. And they sent me back to Rhode Island where I came from. And then I flew here January 8th of 2008, which that anniversary is coming up. And I've been here ever since.
Red flag day.
Well, I know
Portland,
you moved
Oregon.
To New York for a while.
Oh, and then
so you have that perspective of being in New York and then coming back to Portland where, you know, I mean, you know, are there more opportunities for an actor of color here than in New York?
I mean, yes, there are more accessible opportunities.
It seems
say.
Like you were able to work more here.
Yes, and I didn't try to work in New York. I was just trying to get a job in New York.
Right.
I don't see how they do it. It's like, but here there's so much need and want for diversity and equity in the arts. You know, that I get a lot of opportunities, but as an actor of color, I also have to think about what type of work I want to do, what impact I want to have when I step on a stage. I'm a black man. when a person sees a black man on stage, what am I giving them? And I think as an artist, I can make that determination. As producers and arts administrators, we have to think about that too. So there's a lot of organizations that are really, that find that to be something that they really care about. There's a lot of change happening right now.
Yeah, I think there is some change, but it seems like the change is probably more on stage than it is in the audience. From my perspective, even at Artist Rep, and bless their hearts, I just, you know, as somebody who's, you know, been trying to, you know, create this Asian American theater company, Theater Diaspora, and all my community events, I was used to having 55% POC, or people of color, in the audience.
Right.
And then at Artist Rep, it was like 90% to 95% white for the most part, every single audience. And so I'm going, what can we do here? You know?
Well, it's interesting because James mentioned earlier about the board for PCS, for instance. And I think it's really important that people in our city realize that they can communicate with board members and talk about what they want to see. And those are important people, and that boards need to reflect the population of the city.
So you think that would have a huge impact, just changing the color of the board
and also,
the diversity?
Also, what's kind of cool is I'm seeing a lot of rising boards. They're doing a lot of junior boards where they're helping younger movers and shakers, influencers for want of a better term, to learn how to be a board member and then be more inclusive in boards, so we can start to plant the seeds. Not to say that really seeds have to be planted over an extended period of time, because change needs to happen quickly because it's just time. But that's something to remember, that we have agency to talk to board members. They are a part of our community. And also people like James, who, when I was working this summer, is a man who's extremely thoughtful, extremely intelligent and knowledgeable about these issues, and to hire people who are good at addressing things, depersonalizing a lot of these really serious issues, and being able to just say, hey, that's not okay. It's nothing personal. Don't do that again. Let's move on.
Right.
Start to change the fear that surrounds the chat about race.
Right.
Well, I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio, and with theater artists and also hosts of Stage and Studio, Susanna Mars and James Dixon. If you missed any of the show, hear it again at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. And, you know, I love this talk that we're having here. And, you know, to me also, it seems like there's a lot more artists than there ever have been, you know, in the last, especially 5 years. And I went to the RACS, Regional Arts and Culture Council's website, to see any statistics in the amount of arts being done. And just one indicator is that in 2017, RAC funded 92 local artists and 52 nonprofit organizations for artistic projects for 2017. And that was a 10% increase from the year before. And 57% of the grants went to new artists and new organizations, so that had never received RAC funding before. So to me, that's an indicator that there is a lot of evolution happening here in Portland.
There is. I actually happened to be one of the people on that panel.
So what did you, were there a ton of proposals to go through?
Yes, and from what I can say is I was the only person of color in the room, and I felt very honored and blessed, and I felt very lucky to be there.
I'm so glad you were there. That's great.
Yeah, because once we decided who was getting the money, I was like, yeah, that felt good.
Okay.
That makes a
difference too.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Having, you know, diversity in the panels that determine the funding that are supposedly, you know, having to be about diversity too, because there's a big equity, inclusion, and diversity initiative, or diversity, inclusion initiative with a lot of funders right now in the arts.
It's exciting. I was on a panel, a prior RAC panel as well, and I have to say it was very inspiring because, you know, as a resident and Artist Rep in my own universe of Artslandia, and I know you, same with Vertigo and Media Rights, we are ensconced in our own world, and to see the type of work that's happening out, I was just blown away at the beauty of things that were happening. It really opened my eyes quite a lot.
And you want to give all of them the money. You want to give everyone the money. So, like, how do we decide? How do we add up these numbers?
That's good for people to know, too, who applied, who didn't get funding, is keep going.
Keep applying.
And get help from RAC, because Helen Daltozo, everyone over at RAC is terrific.
And Ingrid Carlson.
Mm-hmm. They're helpful.
They are.
Don't be afraid to pitch your grant to them and get the help you need, because everyone is interested in new voices being heard. And if you haven't written a grant before, it can be very daunting.
Well, I just wanted to touch back on something because we were talking about boards and, like, you know, we have to diversify our boards too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I say that to organizations because, I mean, for these larger organizations, you have to have a give get of 10 grand. So you mm-hmm. either give us 10 grand or get us 10 grand. And it's, you know, so who's got 10 grand?
Right.
Especially when you're talking about African-American families, the average African-American family has about $11,000 in savings, when the average white family has about $100,000 in savings. Hmm. How accessible is that?
Right, and that's a really interesting point, I think, is we have to shift, and I think this is a shift not only in the arts, but in the world. You know, what stands for an important person in this world today? You know, it's been money. It's been gravitas or pull. You know, so it's kind of time to really rethink who are people who have something to give and how they give it, because that's crap what we've done up to now.
Right.
I mean, not fully, but you know what I mean.
And when we're called to task, I think the most important thing with everything we've talked about, from who's the new artistic director to the stuff we're doing in the community, how do we respond when we're called to task?
Yes.
When people tell us what we need, how do we respond? Mm-hmm. What is our reaction going to be?
Right. It's got to be thoughtful, but it should also be swift.
So let's talk about what we want to cover, you know, what we would like to see happening in 2018. And of course, you know, diversity issues. You know, I've been focusing on racial and gender equality issues. And as far as, you know, when people send me dozens and dozens of emails every day about their events, mm-hmm. you know, what draws my attention the most is when there is something that, you know, speaks to EDI or equity, inclusion, and diversity issues. Mm-hmm. So what draws your attention? Because, I mean, I would like personally to see more LGBTQ and artists with, events or arts groups with disabilities or mm-hmm. content with, you know, about that on, you know, more in Portland and more on this show. What draws your attention? You want
to? Well,
James?
It's the same. Yeah. I love, I mean, when people say, well, what is diversity? It's like, well, what does diversity mean to you? Mm-hmm. And when we talk about inclusion, what are we being included in?
Mm-hmm.
What assimilation, what would you like for us to assimilate into?
Not just on stage, but also just throughout the
in
whole
the world,
art scene.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I think as I'd love to see more arts organizations answering that call, and I'd love to see more artists creating space for these artists to come in. I did see Fun Home at Portland Center Stage. Mm. It was amazing.
Isn't it beautiful?
And I was like, oh my God, there's gay people in here. There were like lesbians everywhere. And I'm like, it was awesome.
There were lesbians everywhere.
You know,
well, you know, and also lesbians aren't covered in the sense of journalistically aren't covered as much mm-hmm. as,
right.
you know. So I would like to see more of that.
And we can call that LGBTQ, but let's be honest, that intersects with misogyny. And that's these
yes,
are things that we're
go.
Dealing with as in that country right now.
Right.
What were we saying, Susanna?
Well, I think it's really interesting. When I'm real comfortable in the theater, I have to ask myself now, am I comfortable because this is my story? I know this story already. There's a lot of white people on stage. Okay, well, I think being uncomfortable is almost my barometer to some extent. When I leave a theater and I say, gosh, I did not know that story. I didn't know that was even a part of the universe. That's what I'm looking for.
So
now.
you want to learn more.
Yeah. And
you want to be exposed to more.
But not being in a didactic sense,
no.
Not like didactic, but to open the door to, for instance, on the workbench right now is a piece at Artist Rep about a man who's an indigenous clown. Now, how do I describe this? I cannot remember the title of the play, gosh darn it. But it's a wonderful piece. And really, when he started describing the fact that he has a character in his back pocket that's a clown and he's got one foot in this world of clowning, and this clown represents one part of his personality, and then there's him as a man in drag, he's a drag clown, and what it meant to create a character that helped him digest his place in the world. This is something I never considered, thought about,
right.
or anything. And I was pretty fascinated by it.
But that brings up a great point, Susanna, and I talk about this all the time. Like, white people tell a lot of stories. Black people can tell their own stories.
Mm-hmm.
Queer people can tell their own stories. Asian Americans can tell their own stories. We have to create space for people to tell their stories so we can know about their barriers and also know about what makes them, what's so beautiful about these cultures. And I'd love to see more of that for 2018.
And I also, James, to build on that, I'd also like to see stories from people of color or people with disabilities, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Where it isn't about that.
Right.
You know, where they're just people going through life, just like everybody else is going through life, you know, because I always find it kind of limiting when, you know, you write an Asian American play, but you have to write the word something about being Asian in there. Otherwise, they'll cast it with a white actor.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I just realized the other day I do the Brown Paper Bag series with Triangle Productions with these plays that were written at the turn of the 1930s by African-American playwrights. And they were anti-lynching plays. And we take them in the schools. We did one last night at Willamette University. And I realized that's the first time I've actually done a play that was written by a black person for a black person.
You're kidding me.
I have not yet.
You are kidding me.
No, I have not yet done a play written by black people. A character written for a black person by a black person, mm-hmm. and actually directed by a black person.
Well, that says a lot right there, James, and that's something that we, you know, that needs to change. That has to be more happening.
Brandon Jacobs Jenkins, who wrote An Octoroon, which we did at Artist Rep, was
a great show.
And I think really exciting.
I loved it.
Oh yeah, it was really wonderful, and I liked.
Well, we're running out of time, so just let's give some highlights to things like, for instance, in December, Boom Arts is bringing New York City performing artist Sumi Kim to Portland, and I'm going to be featuring her in December. And then Pass and Art is bringing back its popular Black Nativity show for December. You know, there's also, you know, looking ahead, Fertile Ground Festival in January, February Black History Month is going to have a lot of different events and groups performing. And of course, in May, Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, I like to cover that. And also, Vanport Mosaic is during that time too, the Vanport Mosaic Festival. What do you want to give a shout out for?
Well, I popped onto Facebook. I'm like, okay, arts events that are coming up that are cool that I don't know about, go. And my friend, Haley Glickfeld-Bielman, who I met at Portland Opera, told me about this thing called the Child's Frightful Fantasy, which is going to benefit Oregon Food Bank, and it's on necessityarts.weebly.com, and it's Maurice Ravel's whimsical opera portrayed by five singers. It's for young people. It's an opera. It's a sing-along. There's puppets. It sounds awesome. December 8th, 9, 10, 11, Beaverton Library, Cedar Hills Church of Christ, Portland Children's Museum. So take a look at their website.
Okay, one more.
Okay, oh, dang it. Let's see. There's also one more. I have to say Portland Playhouse is A Christmas Carol. Oh, no, and Meredith K. Clark at Portland Center Stage. Don't miss her.
Okay, James, go.
Dang it.
We're also doing a Christmas show at Theater Vertigo. Philip J. Burns presents A Christmas Carol, a one-man ghost story from December 20th through the 23rd. Hosted at Theater Vertigo. He's amazing. It's an amazing one-man show that we're doing. And we will be announcing our stage reading series as well as our next season, which will be amazing.
When are you going to announce it?
We're going to announce that within the next month or so.
Okay, well, keep me posted on that. So, this has been fantastic and way too short, and I'm supposed to end now. I just hate that. I hate that.
I hate it too.
You know, I'm Demay Roberts with Susanna Mars and James Dixon, and thank you both for being here for this enlivening talk. We could talk for another half hour on the Portland Performing Arts Landscape, so maybe we'll have a series two.
Yeah, a reverse
in the coming
ice cream
year.
Sandwich.
Yes.
Thank you for our mochi sandwich, and thank you for continued hosting on stage and studio. And so I look forward to hearing you both, in the coming year. And then before we go, I just want to give a shout out for Profiles' two shows, Water by the Spoonful and The Happiest Song Plays Last, and is running in repertory theater, rotating repertory until November 19th this Sunday at Profile Theater.
And they're having an event with the playwrights.
Yes, and so check it out at profiletheater.org. I had a chance to see Water by the Spoonful.
It's fantastic. A great play.
Fantastic. I saw it.
That's it for Stage and Studio. My thanks to KBOO engineer Tave Fache Drake. If you missed any of the show, visit stageandstudio.org, kboo.fm/stageandstudio, and you can download shows on iTunes. Don't forget to like us on facebook.com/stageandstudio. Tweet me at @stageandstudio. Till next time, I'm Demay Roberts.
When I was a girl, I had a favorite story of a meadowlark who lived where the rivers wind. Her voice could match the angels in its glory.